afternoon, everyone. I'm Mike Herhold, president of the First Friday Club of Greater Akron, and I'd like to welcome you on behalf of myself and the board to our November 2017 program. Our distinguished speaker for today is the Honorable Daniel Horrigan, Mayor of the City of Akron. Please silence your cell phones so that we can all enjoy today's program. On your tables, you will find white cards on which you can write down questions for the mayor. After the talk, we'll have a short announcement break and collect those cards. The mayor has chosen to shorten his speech a little because he would prefer to have a longer question and answer time. And he especially encourages our young people to field him with some questions. I would like to introduce now St. Vincent St. Mary student Kennedy Horrigan, sound familiar, who will offer our opening prayer.
Good and gracious God, we thank you for bringing us together this morning. Be with us as we gather in your name. In a special way, we ask your blessing on our mayor and my dad as he guides our community. Grant him wisdom and strength as he leads our city toward the common good and closer to your kingdom. Please bless this food that we are enjoying and bring us closer to you. We ask this in your most holy name.
Amen. Thank you, Kennedy. It's my pleasure now to introduce First Friday Club of Greater Akron Vice President Bernie Rochford, who will introduce Mayor Horrigan.
I've never got an applause before. That's great. I always dislike when somebody comes up and just reads the bio that you already have at your table. So I've gone off script, and then I realized the bio for the mayor was at last First Friday Club, not this First Friday Club, because we always promo the next person. But I do want to say a few things about the mayor. Politically, Ward 1 councilman, Summit County Clerk of Courts, and now obviously the mayor of the city of Akron. Some of the things people may not know about the mayor: he worked at Swenson's. I worked at Swenson's. We probably didn't cross over too many shifts because he's a lot younger. I live in Ward 1. He was our councilman. He went to St. V. I went to St. V. I have no intentions of ever running for mayor. So, that was my priest. Some other things that people may not know is Mayor Horrigan's an avid cyclist, has basically surveyed the city on his bike over the course of the years, and every year now he leads the lead marathon runner on the course. If you've ever seen the marathon, they have a lead vehicle that's a police cruiser, and then they have a lead car and the bicyclists. And I that's pretty impressive because those guys move pretty fast, and 26.2 miles is a long way, even on a bike. He's a family man with three strong, smart women that are independent, three daughters, I should say, and his wife. So I have four daughters. I can relate to that. And he's an avid movie quoter. And I was told that we should listen to his speech, and there'll be some quotes from obscure movies. So hopefully we'll pay attention to that and maybe get some questions. So with that, Mayor Horrigan.
Good afternoon, and thank you. I'm going to start my timer so I make sure you have as many questions as possible. I don't think as a father I could be more proud than, you know, your daughter gets to say the opening prayer before you give you a speech. I mean that's literally brought a tear to my eye. Thanks, Kev. Couple of house cleaning items. One, I know I have a St. V pin on and I have a green tie, but I really do think we have a wealth of resources when it comes to Catholic education, and I'm glad all the tables are sitting together and behaving nicely. So thank you very much to Hovind and Walsh and to the Elms, too. I know they're all great institutions. We just happen to have about 25 of our family members go through St. Vincent, St. Mary. And so it's a long tradition. I have a youngest there now that is a sophomore. And my two of my three daughters are here, Camille and Kennedy. And if you guys could just raise your hand. And I appreciate you guys and the support. I know the administrators won't like this, but I spent 10 years teaching high school, two at St. Vincent, St. Mary, and eight at Stowe. You should not have to go back to school today, but that's going to be up to somebody else. But I just wanted to throw that out there to see if there was an issue. Sorry about that, Tom. I know you guys are... Well, listen, it really is an honor. I saw the tagline on First Friday where it said, bringing together the best Catholic thinkers. So I can add that to my resume, and I appreciate that, Father, to be able to do that, too. And I guess, growing up, I never really thought of myself as a Catholic thinker growing up on North Hill. And I'll give you a little background about how I got here. I had gotten married, and we had started a family, and I came down to a decision. I wanted to do a little bit more. And so I, like Bernie said, I lived in Ward 1, kind of on the other side of the river, on North Howard Street, and I said, I'm either going to go to law school or I'm going to run for city council. I'd had some friends that were on city council, and I thought, we had an election, and this is why, there are things that are important in your life, and I know everybody understands the importance of voting, but this election came down to, in 97, an incumbent lost by 3 votes. And incumbents don't ever lose, number one, and you don't lose by 3 votes. And so my goal, and as soon as an election night, because my wife was down there at the party, hopefully on a celebration, she came home and says, hey, so-and-so lost. And I said, you got to be kidding me, he lost? And I said, I don't know why I said this, because this is why I'm here. I can beat that guy. And I just said it to myself. I said, I think I can beat that guy. And so over the next year, I kind of talked to people who had served on city council and who had done this and said, well, these are the things that you're going to need to do. And my wife had wanted to start a master's program. So in the summer of 99, I just started walking in Ward 1. And one of the first doors that I knocked on were the Rochfords over there by King School and a lot of other people asking them. And this is the key to how I run the mayor's office and how I have run the clerk's office, how I was a teacher, and how I was on city council. Oftentimes, people will ask you this question. Hey, Mayor, how's it going? And I don't want to answer that, because what I want to know, and this is the customer service approach that I think is different than a lot of other people, my question right back to you is, you tell me. Because I want to hear about the feedback of what we're doing and how it affects your life as opposed to mine. I can tell you that, hey, I think we're adding jobs, or I think we're building houses, or I think we're doing those things. But the question always back, and so when I started walking the ward, and I literally walked it 4 times, my wife used to yell at me too, in the middle of the summer, I would walk around in shorts, and I'd have a nice shirt on, but I would walk in shorts just because it was 90 degrees outside, and I don't think anybody wanted to see me walking in long pants. So as we did that, in the night of the election, because you really don't know if you're going to win until that night, so as elections roll around, they put candidates... And as Judge Teodosio will tell you, they put candidates kind of under stress. And you feel it a little bit. And it's all kind of good. But you don't know if you're going to win. And I won. And it started a career that, I necessarily didn't say at 24 to myself, hey, I want to be on city council in my 30s. I want to be the clerk. I don't think anybody grows up wanting to be the clerk. It just kind of happens. So as I built up a public service career, and I had to leave teaching at the same time I became the clerk, because you couldn't do both. But I wanted to concentrate, I think, on giving back more. And I keep asking myself, why want to give more? And to me, it was a lot about how I grew up. And I think in the faith that I was brought up as a Catholic, I wanted to do more for people than they did for me. And the title of my speech is that all of this in public service... And we make it hard sometimes. I think elected officials sometimes are our own worst enemies. Our biggest mistake is that I think we underestimate sometimes the smarts of the average voter, and we just take for granted that they think one thing. All of this, all of what I do, it's not about me. It's not about me saying, okay, I'm going to go to the state senate, I'm going to be governor, I'm going to be president. This all just kind of happened. And it wasn't a plan to do it. In 2015, when things kind of came together like that, I had thought a couple of years before, hey, at some point, maybe I'll do this. If the situation is right, I was never going to run against the incumbent mayor or anything like that. And I was pretty happy being the clerk. I had a little bit more time on my hands, but that's neither here nor there. And it just kind of came together. So I decided to run, but the first thing I had to do is I had to talk to my family. And this was around Labor Day, and it's a really cute story about my youngest nephew. I talked to my family. I talked to my kids, my mom, my brother, my sister, and I said, this is going to be different. If I'm going to run for mayor, things are going to change a little bit. I'm going to have a pretty busy 180 days. I'm not going to be around as much as I like to. My golf handicap is going to go up, and it did. All those little things. So a couple days after, because I think we were at a family dinner at my mom's, and my sister was walking around the neighborhood with my youngest nephew, Rocco, and ran into a family friend. You remember the story about Rocco? And my sisters were excited, and they wanted to see me run and win, and it was just going to be an exciting thing. But when you tell like a 12-year-old that, you know, because I told them, don't say anything to anybody. Well, Rocco, he took that as, you know, this goes in the vault. I don't say anything. So she's walking down the street and runs into a family friend, and she says, "Hey, is Danny going to run?" And Mary Helen had started to say something, and Rocco goes, "Mom, don't say anything." And so I had Rocco out there protecting me. But as we did this. And I kind of figured all of it. And the first thing that people ask you, you know, hey, what's your platform? And believe me, those aren't things that you just write down on a piece of paper. And as we get elected, you know, we're not elected to serve our own interest. And I think the public perception out there is when you're in elected office that you do these things. But the perception to me is that one of my goals is to change that perception of elected office and think, okay, well, that's a person that's at least doing it for the right things. And it's not a personal one where I say, well, it makes me look better. I think it just makes the office and what we do. How we do this is we collect a lot of tax money and then we spend it. And there's a lot of questions out there like how we spend it. One of the questions I got this morning is that, you know, you sure have a lot of orange barrels around the city, which is right, we do, which means there are a lot of things going on. And people do complain about those things, but there's a lot of thought that goes out to, you know, how we do a sewer project or how we do a new road or something like that. I want to open that up, and that's been the key to all this, is being accountable and being transparent. I'm not going to complain, although I do often at home, but that's a whole different story. If you do complain, offer a solution. I have no problem taking those solutions as we do those things, because sometimes I think the best ideas do come organically, and we have a staff of 1,800 that work for the city. And some of the best ideas come from the people that are out there doing the work every day. And I think they do an excellent job to be able to do all that. And then I think it's under quite trying circumstances sometimes. And sometimes there's not the funds to be able to do all that we want to do. And I'll get into issue four a little bit. As 15 rolled around and the campaign came, you can't get into the room like that without a little bit of ego and thinking that you're the most qualified or the best candidate. And in my heart, I just knew at the right time that I was the best person to do it. Now, if the voters would have said, you know what, we don't think you're... There's an end result to that when it comes to, and obviously they agreed with that. And I've actually been mayor for exactly, Election Day was 2 years ago today. I was elected as mayor of the city of Akron 2 years ago today, didn't take office until January, and so I have been getting pictures about that particular day. As we go through that, it does have an effect on your family, but I am rooted in a strong faith. My wife and I we brought up our three daughters. Bernie said it best, and he can commiserate or he can relate because he does have four daughters, and I do have three. And as they're into college and they're into high school, there are a lot of those similarities, even though I don't think Bernie and I worked together at Swenson's at the same time, and I'm not that much younger. But as plans for mayor, people ask you, you know, what are you going to do about this or what are you going to do about that? That is all kind of a fluid operation of what happens. I think the key for us, I don't want to just survive. I think this area has been on survival mode for a long time. I don't want to just survive. We need to thrive. And I've staked my entire claim. When I was born, we had about 300,000 people in the city. Some of you may remember that many people moving in around. We need more people in the city. So I've staked it literally on population growth. We need to be able to attract people back to the city for a lot of different reasons. About 3,000 people travel more than 50 miles into the city every day, and they make over $200,000 a year. A lot of people have left the city for a lot of different reasons. Our goal is to bring them back. But it's not me telling you, hey, you're going to come back for this reason. What are they going to come back for? And those are the questions that we ask. And I would ask you to turn around in your head, too. Why would I move back here? Would it be for school? Would it be for a better house? Would it be for property taxes that are now abated on new home construction? economically, and I kind of root my first degree from Kent was in economics. I think people respond to incentives. And when you can incentivize something, people will start to do something in a more positive nature. And that will start, I think, with how we connect better our downtown and our neighborhoods. And there are specific plans for downtown growth. There's a strong demand for downtown housing. Many of us may not want to live downtown, but a lot of younger people do. So we're trying to convert some of those buildings downtown into like first floor retail and residences and offices in between. But I don't think a city thrives like it should, unless you have strong neighborhoods too. And we have pockets that haven't seen success for a while. And so how we connect to them, whether it's back to Summit Lake or Kenmore Boulevard or North Hill or Middlebury and all of those, how we connect to them takes a specific plan because each neighborhood is different. Some may need housing. Some may need more business growth. I'm actually doing a study on Middlebury, and if you know where Middlebury is, it's right at the corner of Exchange and Arlington and Market. It's that section. It sits in the middle of three of the largest. Did the mic go out? Oh, okay. I'll yell louder.
Try the other one.
Yep.
On bottom.
Thank you. How about this one?
No.
How about this one?
No.
All right, good. So if we're talking about Middlebury, which sits in the largest, three of the largest employment centers with SUMA and the University of Akron and Goodyear right in the middle of that, we're addressing some health equity concerns because people don't want to move into a neighborhood where there are health equity concerns. So each one of those will have a different plan as we do that. I think health equity to me is a key concern of how we're able to distribute that. And another key issue that I want to talk about just a little bit, how many of you actually live in the city of Akron? Can you give me a show of hands? Okay, good. That's enough votes in the room. I never wanted to be the one that says, hey, we're going to come in and then raise taxes right away. That just wasn't my mantra to be able to do it. As a city, I think we need to be as efficient as we can with the resources that we can. So I took the first couple of years and I looked at a lot of different things of how we expend resources and how we do certain things. And it is about being efficient. And at some particular point, according to this Blue Ribbon Commission that I had commissioned to give me some recommendations about how we should do things, they said at some particular point you may need to think about an income tax increase. And I know the level of frustration out there when it comes to whether it's the federal government, whether it's the state government, whether it's us, about the issue of taxation. And I didn't want to say, you know what, we're just going to come back and try to take more money. It's not Democrat, it's not Republican, it's not any political party. But at this particular point in our city's history, we were without revenue to do some of the key things to keep neighborhoods safe and strong. And so I proposed issue 4, which is a 0.25% income tax increase, which is about $1.68 a week on the average Akron salary, to pay for literally 4 things: police, fire, EMS, and roads. And it's written into the charter to be able to do that. We have not replaced fire stations, our newest fire stations in the 90s. Our average age at the fire station is 54 years. Firefighters have one set of uniforms when they used to have 2. We have 150 police cars that have over 100,000 miles on them each. We could pave 42 more miles of roads and it would raise about $16 million. And I could go on and on about the need for that. But on the flip side of me being efficient on that side, we've cut our workforce in half since 1981. We haven't raised the income tax in this city for operations since 1981. And that would be the year I would be a proud graduate from St. Vincent St. Mary. So it's been quite a while that we've been able to do that. And so as it comes to, you know, Election Day is November 7th, and if you have questions, I'll be more than happy to stick around after to answer specifics, but I'm urging people to vote yes on issue 4 because it is those for those specific things, and I cannot change that to not be able to do that. So when it's into the charter and you do that, I have to spend that money that way as long as I'm mayor, and it has to go back to the charter to change. So getting back to outside of the way that I think we should be doing things, I think there's a way of putting people first, and I think I've led that way from the very beginning. And I, first of all, is designing and building an infrastructure on public spaces that allow people to use. This city needs to be walkable more. It needs to be bikeable. It needs to be well-lit, and I think we need to invite for people of all ages and backgrounds and abilities. And if you look, one of our popular entertainment centers is Lock 3, and if you raise your hand, I'm sure a lot of you have been to Lock 3 and down to the Civic in the summertime. We literally get about 500,000 people that come down to Lock 3 through the baseball and Lock 3 and Civic and everything else every year downtown during the summertime and the festivals, which is a significant amount. My goal is they're all coming down, and then they're leaving. My goal is to have some of those people stay, and you have to ask yourself, why would I want to stay here? Some would and some would not. It has to be more than just somewhere where you go and visit. It can't be just a restaurant where you go back out and you go back home. How do we change our city? Well, I think if you make it more walkable, if you make it more bikeable, if you make it more livable, we can actually attract people back to live in the city. The other mantra that I even started with, the first meeting I had as cabinet, with my cabinet, about 3 days into my term, a lot of times you will go into an organization and on the wall they will have their written slogan or their motto about how they operate, and they say, we will strive to do this, this, and this. The city is a service organization. We provide services for other people, whether it's plowing roads or repairing streets or a lot of those different things. And I think with every constituent group that we have, and we have business groups, we've got hospitals, we've got residents, we've got all of those different groups that we deal with on a daily basis, I think you can narrow your motto down to two words, and it's we care. We care has to be the first thing that comes out of your mouth. And if you don't answer the phone, and I tell this story, in one of the instances of walking by somebody who was answering the phone at another government office a while back, they answered the phone, so-and-so's office, what do you want? And to me, that's just, you may have had that happen to you, but that's not why we're here. I take pretty seriously the fact that the public does pay us to do a job, and if we don't do that job, there's repercussions for that. So as you answer the phone and as you're treating people with respect, because that's all that you have, you might not have the answer that they like. It might be the wrong answer. But the way you answer the phone, and nobody walks into McDonald's or nobody walks into any retail establishment, if you've ever walked up to the corner, to the counter, they've never said, what do you want? Because if they said, what do you want, you're not coming back. And so as an administration, I said, everything that we do has to start with we care. People have to feel that we care. And I think that changes and that permeates down into a lot of employees who start to take a little bit more responsibility for doing their jobs and making us, from a perspective standpoint, look like that we care. Because if you don't, I think that's where cities go wrong, or that's where organizations go wrong, is when people have that perception that, you know what, this is, they're not doing what I told them they should be doing, and then it goes in another direction. So as we are making our city, I think, more livable and more walkable, it's also the accessibility part of it. I am out in the public, I think, quite a bit, and whether I'm stopping at a... I get particular joy out of this, and I do this every once in a while. Once in a while, people will write me an email or they'll write me a letter, and it'll be, you know, a pretty terse tone as they're taking it, you know, and I can't repeat all those words here, Father, that they call, but I take particular joy in, especially if they list their address, I'll go knock on their door. And things change quite a bit once you knock on the door and the mayor knocks on their door, but you kind of get to a level of frustration that people have sometimes. We don't get there that quick, but I think it goes a long way when you go knock on somebody's door. We need to be as accessible as the government. So we do put things online. Transparency is key. We put our checkbook online. We're more accessible when it comes to getting to the office and getting to this. And our Deputy Service Director, Chris Lettle, who is here today, actually goes to a lot of people's houses when they complain about whether it's water or whether it's a sewer problem or whether it's a road problem, and they are absolutely flabbergasted when the deputy service director shows up, knocks on the door and say, hey, what is the issue? I think that goes a long way. And it's about customer service, and if we're not about that, I don't think we're doing our job as best we can. I think we have to build off somebody made the comment that, especially our staff in the mayor's office, is that it feels a lot like a family. I want to work with, obviously everybody wants to work with people that you like and that you respect and that you trust, but it's key especially for me because it is about family. It is about taking care of not only of ourselves, but we're in charge of taking care of the other 200,000 people that are actually in our city. And I think if that attitude doesn't permeate, I think we go backwards instead of forwards. And at this point, I think in our history, I think we're on the edge of a renaissance with a lot of different things that are going on. And I'll explain a couple of the other big projects. As I said, we're trying to build a better sense of community and family among our cabinet employees. We have a mayor's administrative council. Yesterday wrapped up the first graduating class of the City of Akron Mayor's Institute. And this was giving 24 residents kind of an 8-week course that took them kind of behind the scenes or behind the giant curtain of how a city operates. And we took them through the paces once a week. Every Tuesday, they would either go to the police department, the fire department, the service director's office, the mayor's office, city council, all of those, just to give them an appreciation of what actually goes on a daily basis. For too long, we've built walls around our organizations and we're not accessible. But the more you can contact us, I think the easier it is for us to be able to create, I think, a better impression. We work very closely with the International Institute. We've instituted Akron's first Civil Rights Commission and a non-discrimination ordinance, working closely with senior groups and Black Watches. In getting back to issue four, a couple of things that we had worked through, we could, you know, technically you could use that money for a lot of different things, but if you're going to keep the city safe and strong, you have to be able to give our first responders and that public infrastructure the investment that it needs. If people pay attention to details, and as my dad had said one time, you know, don't worry about the dollars, count the pennies, because the dollars will take care of themselves. People drive around this city and they see maybe it's a piece of trash here, or this road's not paved, or they have to go through more barrels to do this, which is why we intentionally started a website called Drive Akron Now that you can access through your phone that tells you those detours. And I know there are a lot of detours, and there are a lot of explanations for those. One is the sewer project, another is a lot of heavy highway work that ODOT is doing in and around there. Believe me, but we take those complaints pretty seriously when you're stuck on a ramp for more than 5 minutes or when you're stuck at a light for maybe seven. We will try and change the timing on all those. People notice those things, and they contact us on a daily basis saying, I'm stuck at this intersection, I'm stuck there. And we will go out and change some things if it makes sense to be able to do it. So I don't want to look like that we're not being responsive to that, because if we're not, I think we continue to go in the wrong direction as a city and as a leader. And as we do that, I think it's more than important, I think it's key that I set the key example of how I want people to treat other people. If you're not treating them with dignity and respect, if you're not at least caring about what their issue is, I think they're in the wrong job, to tell you the truth. And we've made some significant changes to be able to address some of that. All of you deal with government on a different basis, and whether it's local or state or federal, you know, the higher you go up, the kind of more difficult it is to find somebody to answer a phone. We all get stuck on IVRs and we have to push buttons and things like that. I think it's extremely important that we answer the phone and people hear somebody to hear their complaint. You might not like the answer, and it might not be the answer that you might want to hear today, but at least someone is working you through some of those things. And I think as an organization, it has to start with me and it has to start with cabinet to set that particular tone to be able to do it. I'm fairly proud of our first 2 years. There are a lot of things going on at the same time when it comes to whether it's neighborhood revitalization or whether it's downtown or trying to attract businesses here, whether it's reworking through the airport. And you can thank Mr. Maynard for pushing me hard in that direction to look at that, and I appreciate that. And when you look at the Rubber Bowl, which has so many memories for so many other people, but has it outlived its usefulness over this particular time? There are a lot of those decisions that get made on a pretty much a daily and weekly basis. Because our city is changing. We have to be able to make ourselves attractive to not only the people that are here, but also the people that we want to maybe move into the city. And I've always thought from an economic development strategy, we could do a lot of different things. I could knock on the door of a Chinese company that makes iPhones. I could knock on the door of another tire maker. We can do all of those things. But I firmly believe that if we're not knocking on the doors of the people that own businesses here and asking them that question, tell me how it's going. Remember, it's not about me. You tell me how it's going. What do you need to help your business in 10 years? Is it a piece of land? Is it workforce development? Is it better IT? Is it all of those different things? I'll either lead, follow, or get out of the way. And there's some certain things that we'll lead on. There's a lot of other things that we will probably follow on or maybe even partner on. But we need to learn to get out of the way in some of those things. And I think determining that almost on a daily or weekly basis is one of the keys to our success, to be able to thrive and not just survive as a city. So I wanted to leave as much time for questions as I can. I'm not sure if I took the entire 30 minutes, but we can leave as much time for questions as we can. So I really appreciate you listening and not necessarily falling asleep during this luncheon, because I know you had a great meal. That was kind of funny, by the way. I'm not sure if nobody laughed, but go ahead, come on up.
Thank you. Take a rest.
Okay. Oh, I have one announcement.
Okay.
Can I do one announcement?
Sure.
I will do one announcement and make sure I don't fall off the stage. A lot of times the city will get called upon. We've had quite a few hurricanes over the last 2 months that have affected a lot of different areas. When the one hit Houston, there was an organization that has been organized through Love Akron. They're trying to reach out to a particular community to try to help them. The city of Akron, and my charge was, I wanted to try and help a community that necessarily didn't have the best insurance, and it was affected quite strongly. So we chose Port Arthur, Texas, which is a city of about 60,000 people outside of Houston. And we've chosen their school that literally took about 36 inches of water, and the kids are still not back there. So what we have organized is a concert next Friday night at the Civic Theater. Tickets are $15 and $20, and there will be various things that go on. It's the victims of Hurricane Harvey. So if you are interested in trying to help out, it is the Civic. It is next Friday, and I appreciate it very much for listening. So thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Horrigan, for your reflections and insights. Please take a moment to write down questions and then hold them up in the air so that one of our board members can pick them up. If there aren't cards, you can use the back of the program for next month. While we're doing that, we have some announcements. Our next First Friday Club will be here at Tangier on Friday, December 1st. For an always fascinating and insightful presentation by Vatican correspondent John Allen. And if you have not heard Mr. Allen, he has been often called the favorite correspondent of the Pope. And he gives us lots of really interesting insights into the comings and goings and kind of the background information about what's going on in the Vatican. And I know most of us who have heard him over the years have learned quite a bit from what he shares with us. So we encourage you to join us next month. If you are one of the people listening to us on our podcast on our website, we invite you also to join us in person by making reservations. You can send a check for $20 to the First Friday Club, 795 Russell Avenue, 44307. Or you can call our phone number at 330-535-7668 each month. Our online or schedule online at our website using Eventbrite. If you sign up on a monthly basis, please let us know by the Tuesday before the talk. Please consider also signing up for a yearly, 6-month, or multiple presentation subscription. We will be sending those out shortly for those of you who are our regular subscribers to sign up, and the packages for multiples save you a little bit of money. You can hear a podcast of previous speakers by logging into our website, and please consider recommending us to friends. If you are not on our mailing list, take time to leave the information for us. I'd now like to recognize first-time attendees, so if the first-time attendees could either stand or raise your hand if you haven't been to First Friday before. Welcome. Please come back. We have students here from Archbishop Hoban, Our Lady of the Elms, St. Vincent, St. Mary, and Walsh Jesuit. Please stand. I'd also like to recognize our board members for First Friday Club and our office manager, Carol Scalf. So if you could all please stand. now for our questions and answers, led by Bernie Rochford. Oh, wait, one more announcement. Diocese of Cleveland Stewardship and Evangelization Conference. I'd like you to draw your attention to the brochures on the table for the Stewardship and Evangelization Conference sponsored by the diocese. It explains the program. There will be a clergy program on November 10th and a full conference on November 11th. There will be nationally recognized speakers, breakout sessions, interaction with vendors, and parish solutions. So please take a look at the brochure. Please take it with you. And it should be a really wonderful program, and it's very well planned and organized by that diocesan office. So take time to look at that if you can. Okay, Bernie.
Okay. First question is, how does your Catholic faith influence the way you make decisions? And I'll add, what can the faith community do to help Akron and the vision you have for Akron?
I think I need the microphone.
Oh, thank you.
I think I got that question a couple of weeks ago at Theology on the Rocks. I think the way I kind of explained how I like to approach things, it is a people first. It is about serving others. And to me, it's about servant leadership. I'm not here for myself. So as we go through that, I think historically government has designed a system to fit itself as opposed to fitting the customers that it's supposed to serve. That's a pretty, you know, it's a lot of scar tissue on there to be able to peel back and get off. But even as we look at parking, you know, if you can go around, hopefully you never have to go to the courthouse, but if you notice, the courthouse is all surrounded by, you know, police and sheriff vehicles when other people need to use it, need to park across the street. That's just one little example that we're trying to peel back those things. As we service government, as government offers that service, how does it serve there? And how can the faith-based community help? I think they've been very supportive of the effort so far, and whether it's Love Akron or whether it's the Catholic Church, and one of the things that are, and I'll try to get to church more, Father, I apologize for that. One of the most rewarding things to me is I get invited to a lot of churches across the community, African-American churches, Presbyterian, and the service is a little bit different, obviously, but it's rewarding for me because I get to see people in their own faith. And that's the heart of many communities, is their faith. And so as I take a little bit away from that each time, as we're able to do it, so it, you know, it can help me better understand, you know, what the decisions are that they have to make. So.
And this one, I think, is from one of the students. You've accomplished a lot. What still keeps you up at night?
Oh, boy.
Other than your daughters.
Yeah. Waiting for one of them to come home? No, I'm just kidding. They're all home and in bed by 11. So it's the unknown. I mean, I get phone calls a lot, sometimes at 2 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, 11, whatever it takes. I kind of have a couple of policies. One, we have a lot of city employees out there working every day. Some of them do get hurt. So if somebody does go to the hospital, I've gone at 3, I've gone at 4, I've had to go to Mayfield. Those things, and when you get that late night call, that, you know, you sleep a little uneasy, and because you worry about a lot of different things. It's just, not that I'm a worry wart, but you care. And then I hope that comes across, because you're worried about those people who go do their jobs, and you want everything to work, not that it's gonna every single time, but those are the things that keep you up, like at night when, you know, you don't know what's gonna happen. So it's kind of the unknown.
This one's been in the news a bit. There are a significant number of people living in Akron who are homeless. Has the city developed a strategy, strategy or program to help those in need? And then do you support the efforts of the Second Chance Village?
Well, that was a couple of questions. Let me go to the first part. When I became mayor, we usually get some what they call home funds from one of the federal departments, and they were always traditionally going to three different departments of how we do this. And in talking to some of the homeless advocates, we kind of figured out that may not be the best approach. We really only have one 24-hour drop-in center located in the city of Akron. So what we've done is opened ourselves up. And the other part of this, so when you ask the question, you know, as the city developed the strategy to address homeless, my first question is that should we? Should the city be addressing the homeless problem, or is it another organization that does that? Well, I don't think we can not do it. So we partner with a lot of other organizations to be able to, I think, be able to help. And what the real cause of homelessness is, are there mental health issues, are there drug issues, are there a lot of those other things? And that's why we need to be a little bit more comprehensive with our monies that to be able to do that, because they are limited, and we don't know whether they, you know, some, you know, because a lot of funds eventually are getting proposed to be cut, especially the community development block grant monies that we do to do the homeless. And do I support the Second Chance Village? I think technically I can say right now it's a zoning violation, but we've been very careful in saying, okay, technically it's a zoning violation, but what good is it doing for the community? Because there are some law and order people out there who say, you know what, you need to go Palmer raid those tents. And if you remember the 20s and the histories, they did the Palmer raids by getting, you know, on immigrants. That's not the approach that we want to take. And so I think we want to work with whoever's trying to address the homeless situation and say, what are those issues? And is it a mental health issue? Is it an addiction issue? Is it a job? Is it workforce development? Because I think there's a lot of different things. So we're trying to be strategic in our approach. And to me, it goes back to, you know, we need to care for our residents. And I think that comes through in some of the policies that we do, too. So good question.
What advice or encouragement do you have for fellow Catholics considering government jobs or public office?
Wow, I haven't had that one. It's very rewarding work. I mean, depending on what you do, public service is very rewarding work. So whatever you decide to do, whether it's police, fire, or public works, or getting involved in the political end of it, you get pushed. Your faith gets pushed in a way. But I've told this to as a million people who have asked me about whether it's a position that I have. And I said, you know, my faith is my own and you can't have it. And so whether you like that or not, you know, and it guides the way I make decisions, my faith is mine. You're not going to take it from me. It's just because of the political whims of the time. That's what it is. I've developed it. I spent 54 years developing this. I'm not going to throw it out the window just because you say you're not going to vote for me. And that's immense, immense. I'm not doing that. That's a round of applause. Thank you.
How is Akron improving the high infant mortality rates?
Well, this was something that I had taken on right away. One, we held the first health equity summit in the city of Akron in forever last year. We went out and put significant resources and recruited all three of the hospitals to put resources into a health equity ambassador. We've worked diligently with the Department of Health and our state representatives to be able to bring more resources. And you need to have a plan. In fact, we're having a press conference. Is that November 10th or 11th? Well, it's either the 10th or the 11th to announce, what's the name? It's Akron's first term.
Full term first birthday.
Akron's full term first birthday. And that's part of that caring about that, you know, because especially in specific zip codes, as we look at that, what are the resources that people need to be able to make it past to get to that first birthday? Is it a community health worker? Is it a transportation to a doctor? Is it progesterone? All of those different things. And here's the thing, if you would have asked me as mayor, would I know about those things? No. But you need to be able to, I think we have to be able to address those, I think, to care for the entire city. And that's what we've brought. I've decided to use the mayor's office to address health equity and infant mortality as one of the health equity issues.
It goes along with that in a large respect. At first, it's a thank you for your service. It's unsigned. So, racial divisions are evident in our city, from conflict on council to the controversy over the sheriff's handling of the recent jail deaths. What can you do to provide leadership in this area?
Well, I would argue with the one word when you ask what can you do. I would ask myself what more can I do, because I think I have provided that leadership. To do that, council's a little bit different of a story, because I think there's a lot more involved when it comes to politics and that. And we've worked pretty closely with even county authorities to be able to address some of those issues, and we've brought pressure to bear to say, you know, if these are the concerns in the community, they need to be addressed, as instead of saying, you know what, we're just going to do them like we've always done them. And you get to a certain point where, you know, it's you make a decision to do something, but how we've addressed it, I think specifically with council, you can ask somebody out on a date all you want, and if they don't want to go, they don't want to go. But we involve the University of Akron, the faith-based community, to help counsel, you know, if there is a serious disagreement between the way that somebody approaches something and somebody else approaches something, that's just a policy discussion. You never tell somebody to sit down, you never tell somebody to shut up. I mean, it's not respectable behavior to be able to do that, and there are consequences to it, too. We're all up every 4 years. And so there are term limits to that, and that's where the voters come into play to do that. So we've tried to help on all three occasions to heal those and to help people have a better understanding of what their role is to be able to do it, too.
What about maybe not the sheriffs, but justice issues, police response, those sorts of things?
The first one is about 4 years ago, the city undertook the option, not the option, because everybody was going this way anyway. We deployed body-worn cameras to increase accountability and transparency on all our patrol officers. It's about $300,000 a year to store the video, but we've made the commitment to be able to do that. All of the officers undergo CIT training, implicit bias training, and there's one other one. I'll remember it as you get done with that. But there's a modern-day policing that I think is a little bit different than it was 10 years ago, and so how you interact with customers. And I think even the name, when you say community-oriented police, and how you know, what's the approach of, I'll tell you a quick story. We had, and this is how I think the Akron Police Department is doing a little bit better. There was a couple that was walking through Akron, the University of Akron, and they were yelling at each other, both, back and forth. And Charles Brown and myself, who's Deputy Mayor for Public Safety, were walking about 100 yards away from him. But you can hear them. They were yelling pretty loud. And she was yelling at him, and he was just trying to get away. And I thought, please, don't anybody hit anybody, because somebody's going to get arrested. So he called for a car, but they didn't send a marked car, and they didn't send somebody in uniform. Because I think there is a perception out there that if they send somebody in uniform and they send a marked car, that it's automatically going to be negative. So they sent an unmarked car and somebody who was in civilian clothes, and everything worked out, thankfully, okay on that. So sometimes it's just the approach. You're still sending a car, but you're sending in a way that's maybe not so threatening. Those are the forward-thinking ideas of how you interact with people and what their perception is of the police department or anybody else of how I think you get better outcomes.
And don't worry about missing that third point. I think the presidential candidate missed one somewhere along the way. How are you planning to deal with the opiate drug crisis?
Well, I would go back to the word planning. We have, nobody knows that, a lot of people don't know that City of Akron spends about $3 million a year to do addiction treatment through drug courts. I've also instituted two or three major things. One, we put Narcan in every police responder's car. Two, we instituted QRTs, which are quick response teams that include somebody from the social service agency and somebody from police or fire to be able to make that visit after the emergency room. We've seen our overdoses drop by considerable double digits at least. Overdose deaths have gone down. And that's the other thing, though, too. As a city, as the mayor of the city, of course I'm worried about everybody that dies. Are there other agencies that we need to work with that have those funding that are addressing the mental health part of it? So that would include ADM, that would include the courts, that would include every other jurisdiction when it comes to law enforcement. And there's the opiate task force. So we've been kind of a leader, I think, in the community to do QRTs and to put Narcan in cars. It goes systemically back to the pill mills 10 years ago along the river and the prescription of opiates and how we address all of those. So we put a lot of resources and time and energy to say, how are we going to affect those? Because another quick story, I don't think anybody would have imagined that they would have taken a rhinoceros tranquilizer that is 10,000 times stronger than morphine and then mixed it with heroin for you to be able to get high on. Well, in East Liverpool, a small little speck got here on a police officer's on the guy literally overdosed. The police officer touched his thing and died, and they had to bring him back with Narcan. So the job that they go out and do, you can't tell Narcan or carfentanil from anything else on somebody's uniform. So that changes the entire aspect of responding to that call and what the equipment that you need. And that's part of the issue with issue 4. We want to make sure they have the best equipment and the best training.
With all the priorities in the city, what mode or process do you use to prioritize spending or not spend?
Boy, that's a good one, too. I've made a list of priorities to myself. It's about education, income, and health. So how do we improve people's education, income, and health? Education-wise, I thought we were lacking in the workforce development area, so we recruited a state community college to locate on Market Street. Check that box. On the health equity issue, I don't think we were doing enough to address infant mortality. We're having our second summit to bring more resources there. The income part of it's a little bit sticky because we want to be attractive to employers to add jobs. But what do employers need? And sometimes it's gathering that data that says, okay, I need this type of engineer. I need this type of, welder. I need these type of things. And we've been spending a considerable amount of time with an economic development strategy, which I probably will unveil by the end of this year, that takes a little bit different approach than just what they used to call smokestack chasing. But how I prioritize it is that, our public safety is number one. I mean, you have to have a fully funded and fully equipped and trained public safety force, but then it goes from there as to how it kind of goes down. It makes issue four that much more important. Every decision I've made for the first 2 years, it always comes down to, all right, do we have the money to be able to do this? And it's a smart way to do. So I gather a lot of input first, whether it's not just from my staff, but from outside experts who I've been able to rely on. Hey, that's not necessarily a good idea, or that is a good idea. So it's a little bit deliberate, and I think a little bit more conservative, but I think, we have to be good stewards fiscally first before we just, wildly spend public money.
Speaking of spending public money, are there plans for a fiber optic network for the Akron region? That's probably coming from one of the kids.
I think we have one, but there's a lot of dark fiber out there, too. We've worked fairly closely with AT&T, and these are national companies. Yeah, there is a plan for a fiber optic network. I think we're going to look pretty closely, I think, with Fairlawn and their gig to maybe expand it, coming west, going that way. We have future meetings next month, actually, with Verizon and AT&T to help them. What are the plans for their expansion into that fiber optic network, too? So, but like I said, there's a lot of dark fiber out there anyway. And I would go back to the previous question. What role is it as the cities to provide that fiber optic network? I think it's my job to provide that opportunity for a company to grow and then build that highway. It's our job to build the road. It's your job to drive down it. If you don't drive down it, that's my fault. So we're trying to provide those opportunities for people to drive down those roads.
What's your stance on Ohio, specifically Akron, as a sanctuary, and I assume a sanctuary city offering refuge?
Well, we have a 150-year history of welcoming immigrants into the city. And thankfully, they welcomed my grandfather, who literally fell off a boat from Italy in 1918, and the third or fourth generation here, I'm the product of that. So I've always felt that we're going to be a welcoming city, and it's not lost on me that every person that has declared themselves a sanctuary city is also running for higher office. So I think there's a way around the sanctuary city designation to say, but we're not using the police department as our federal raid. They're not participating. It's not that you can't comply with federal law by doing that, but the population of immigrants that have come into Akron are not on any sort of list to be able to do that, too. I'm not saying that there's not one or two. So we're cooperative with the federal authorities, but it's very rare that they even ask us for things. And the actual booking part of that, it actually would come through the sheriff's department, the way our justice system is set up. So we need to be welcoming because we need to grow. And I said that from the very beginning. Population growth is our key, and it's one of the ways that has kind of stabilized North Hill. There's about 15,000 immigrants that live there that have opened businesses and built houses and have moved into houses and have a significant economic impact into our city. I'm not opposed to anybody's growth. We need growth from all over, and I think immigration is one of the ways we can do it.
I think maybe one more question. Does that sound about right, Mike, or a couple more?
A couple more. We have plenty of time.
Okay. I guess you're going to be here for no.
That's
what fine. What ideas do you have for making areas, and they identify Goodyear, safer for teens and women? And one of the things I would just add is the perception of crime versus
crime,
the actual amount of crime.
Yeah, and I look at crime statistics every week about where they are and what actually would make Goodyear or Kenmore Boulevard or North Hill or Middlebury or Summit Lake more safe. I think each one of those areas are a little bit different, and that's where we look at, is it more stabilized businesses? And when you ask about Goodyear Heights, what part of the Heights are we talking about? Just the business district right down there through the boulevard, or is it up near the park? Because there was an instance with the tennis team this year that that happened, that, you know, people came in, they made some remarks, and then they got right back out again. So it's hard. Having resources helps, and I would tell you that we are budgeted at 455 police officers. When you take away the ones that are on military leave and maybe the ones that are on disability or maybe the ones that are on special assignment, now you're talking about 415. And is that enough for a police force for our size? So maybe it is more in number when it comes to some of those community policing and walking those neighborhoods as opposed to driving by. And it's something that we've taken a look at. Like I said before, every one of the decisions that we've had to make is that, do we have the money to be able to do it? And quite frankly, the last 6 years, we haven't had the money to be able to expand that.
But that actually is a wrap for the questions, but I would just like to, and I know Mike's going to come up and thank you as well, but I think your upbringing in faith certainly shines through with your mission, what you're doing, how you handle yourself and the staff, and I think that's admirable to your parents and your friends who make collectively make you who you are.
Thank
so
you.
Let's give Danny a
big round of applause. Thank you. Can I say one word? Yeah. I know everybody wants to get back to work, but I didn't mention, and I tell you, because I met Tom about 15 years ago, Judge Tedosio. He has been a mentor in how he conducts himself, too, and so I would be remiss if I didn't say thank you for what you've been able to provide for the community, too. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Bernie, for that excellent question-answer period. It's my pleasure to introduce Archbishop Hoban's student, Jenna Kupchik, who will lead us in our closing prayer.
In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Creator God, we give you thanks for bringing us together here today, for your guiding presence, for the meal that we shared, and for the conversations in which we participated. We are grateful for the gifts of fellowship and understanding, of mutual respect, of perseverance, and insight into common concerns we share. We ask you to continue to guide Mayor Dan Horrigan and all leaders throughout the world and country. Guided by the Holy Spirit, help them to lead with courage and wisdom. Bless us, God, as we leave here today. May we remember that you are the God of all wisdom, and you are willing to lead us forward. Remind us always of your love as we put our conversations into action as we work to be peacemakers and agents of change in the city of Akron. We ask this and all things through your Son, Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
Amen.
In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, Jenna.
Again, thank you everyone for coming. We look forward to seeing some of you back here next month on December 1st. Once again, you will really enjoy and learn a lot of insider information about the Vatican when John Allen is here, so please feel free to come back. Thank you, and have a safe travels home.